So this is the Psalm Conference. It's the, what's the date today? It's the 24th of, where are we now? October. And what year? 2013. And this is Roger Layton. I'm going to give a talk on Towards an African Digital Library. Now, the reason I put that at the beginning of a recording is quite simply for the purpose that when I listen back to it in 10 years' time, I'm never going to know where that recording came from. It's just a digital file. So just having that little leader at the beginning is very useful information. So I'm going to talk to you today about an idea that I've had for many, many years, mainly because of my involvement with something called Europeana. Have any of you heard of Europeana before? Have any of you used Europeana? Okay. We've been involved in a project, and as far as I know, we're the only African company or institution involved in a direct project with Europeana. And we're one of 36 companies involved in one of about 10 projects that are connecting on the outside of Europeana. But I'm using the experience with that to ask the question, why don't we build one here? So I firstly want to talk about the digital context for museums. And out of that, I want to talk about a maturity model, which is, how far are you on the digital chain at this point? From that, I want to talk about lessons that we've learned from Europeana, from being the outside, that I believe we can bring here, and that we can improve the Europeana model for the African context. I then want to talk about this vision for an African digital library. I want to talk about critical success factors, and then an initial plan. And if we've got a bit of time, I want to say, where does this fit, and do we have a choice? So these are the two questions that come from that. So here's the first quote. If you're not visible on the internet, you do not exist. Okay? And as a part of that, the issue of the digital dark ages. Any of you heard of the digital dark ages? It says we could get to a point that if we don't look after our digital context, that history over a certain period of time will be non-existent. That's the problem we're facing. So that's it. So I've been using another term called the digital dark continent. Africa was always known as the dark continent because nothing was known inside about it. We're now getting to the point that in the digital space, we're becoming the dark continent again. And that's a bit of a challenge. The question is, when is the statement going to be true? So I'm going to focus today on discoverability, which means how do people find out what it is you've got? And I believe that this is becoming an increasingly relevant element of your role as museums, is to be discovered, to be found. To be found nowadays doesn't mean that you find it on a tourist book and somebody arrives or a researcher knows who you are. We need discoverability down to the items in your collection, and then you become more relevant. So that's the issue I'm focusing on today, and that is the only thing about this this context. Here's the issue. If you build it, they will come. You might have heard that term before from that wonderful movie called The Field of Dreams. How many people put up a website and they say, well, we've got a website now, so we should be noticed on the internet. But of course, nobody ever finds you there. So you have to hope and pray that somebody's actually going to get there. So we want to make it easier. We don't believe for one minute that Google is the right entry point into this. We need another entry point that is trusted. And the word trust is coming up more and more in the internet. What can you trust and what can you not trust? Can you trust Wikipedia? I don't know if you heard the article yesterday, where a huge amount of Wikipedia articles have now been pushed up there effectively to promote other products. And now they're trying to discover which ones they are and remove them. But Wikipedia can't be trusted. Google can't be trusted. What can you trust? And that is where we're getting to. We need 100% trusted content. I guess you all would say if somebody comes into your museum, you could virtually guarantee that everything you've got there is trusted with good provenance and it is the authentic. Can you say the same for a website that you found that has assumed to have artifacts? So I want to say what informs a digital. So in leading up to this, I had a look at a few recent papers. One of them, the SAMA PSTI, published in 2004. I presume some of you are familiar with this. Probably some of you even wrote it. But it is to do with what is professional standards. And I looked at there to say, what mention is made? No mention is made there of online collections. Everything assumes a physical museum, and it assumes people come to you. The same with ICOM in the definition of a museum. The ICOM museum guidelines, the ICOM code of ethics, all of them assume that people come to you as the museum in physical space. None of them have addressed the issue of what happens when people come through the digital door. So there's nothing very much that's going to inform this process. When we analyze museums in terms of the digitizing and making things digital, making things online, making things available, I like to look at it in three levels. At the very bottom level, we've got the governance issue, which means what does the board of directors do, what does senior management do compared to anybody else? This is where digitization strategies ratified at the board level become a direction for a museum to go in. Then moving up to the level of the collections, the collection management, we've placed a huge amount of emphasis on the spectrum guidelines, the spectrum practices. How many of you here know of spectrum? A lot of you know of it. Everybody should know of it. It is really worldwide best practice now. It is referred to in all the other best practices as the best practice for museum management in the world. We have kind of taken on the ad hoc role of being the champions for the country. We're in touch with the Collections Trust. We've even brought the Collections Trust out here for workshops as well. And we are very much advocating it, promoting it, and also building our systems around it as well to be compliant. But that's where this comes as an important area, that if you're going to be digital, you've got to have a good management process in place as well. This is where your inventory start moving away from cards, away from Excel, into fully functional digital database inventories. The next thing is the digitization process, which starts where you can start taking digital reproductions of them or related items and start encoding the information. When one looks at the metadata around this, it's fairly complex. Unfortunately, Spectrum deals with that. Next, you move up to some of the discussions held just now about digital exhibitions, virtual exhibitions, what can do there, right up to, similar to the paper that I presented last year on using phones as a tour guide. Okay, so let's have a look now at what I say is the maturity model. And I'm now going to ask you to be honest. I put down six levels. Level zero, how many of you don't have any website at all? Nothing. This is honesty time now. How many of you have got a basic website, like a single page, with just basic information? And I must ask another question. How many of you don't know what a website is? Level two is an own website with a few pages, bit of governance, bit on collections, bit on your location, where you are, how to find us. I'm sure that a lot of you are at that level. That's what I call the level two. Level three gives you the first link down into items within collections where you're featuring certain items, but you don't really have a good search facility in there, like a dump of item, maybe featured items. When I'm moving to level four, you've got full online collections, powerful search, access to digital context is sustainable, and you've got persistent identifiers. And I'm going to talk about persistent identifiers just now. Level five is you're now discoverable. So that is, to me, the top of the current tree in maturity. So I'm going to give you a couple of examples here. One at level two, the one that we presented on Monday, I showed you the little QR code for it. There you can see the QR code that was mentioned earlier. That gives you entrance to that, and that gives you entrance to this. We have taken the policy decision that we build for mobile first and then adapt it to laptops later. So we don't build big websites first. We build them to fit into the profile of mobiles and tablets. And for the last year, that's what we've been doing. Here's one for the Winterton Museum. It just shows the pathway going there. On top of it, information pointing to a website. We would say that this is a level two website. It provides basic information. And that's a very good starting point. And we've made an offer that we'll build these little websites for any museum for free. Okay, just as a service, because I think it's nice for people to find their way through a mobile phone. So anybody who wants to come to us and say, please build me one, give me the data, and we'll put one together. The next one I'm going to say is at the level of 3 to 4 is where you've now got a bit more access to content and a bit of a search engine. I've said level 3 to 4 because we don't have the level of search engine that I'd be happy with. This is a particular project funded by the National Heritage Council, done by the Kulamani Support Group, who then asked us to build the website, the database, and the repository for them. And this is a digital repository that pulls in data from many, many other repositories, and it's got its own digital content as well from their own records, that to provide a single entry point for anybody who's interested in the Boy Patong massacre. And this was done, it was launched in Boy Patong on Heritage Day. And this provides access into the Nelson Mandela Center of Memory, into the WITS archive, into many other archives as well. We've probably got about 2,000 or 3,000 digital entries accessed on here and all indexed and available. This is the start of the project. We do believe this will continue from there. So Europeana started in 2005. 29 million items currently, but that's a very small portion of what's available there. 2,200 contributing institutions from 36 countries. And I'm going to do a little search, which I did as part of this. I typed in the search Oliver Tambo. And there you can see there's the search part there. And then out come the results. And I found 52 entries. Out of 29 million, I found 52 that dealt with Oliver Tambo. I did try to do one on Sol Plaatje, and it didn't find anything, so I didn't use that example. Nelson Mandela finds about 150 items. Clearly, this is a Eurocentric base of information. It isn't an Afrocentric base. And that is where the gap is. And they want European content. They want to highlight European culture. The types available, audio, video, image, text, any form that you can have. They have about 10 different forms that you can put of data. Every one of these items comes from different institutions. So, at the second level, I click on one of them and I find some information. This is what's traditionally called metadata. A description, a creator, geographic coverage, time periods, a where, when, what, all those questions are asked in the metadata. In particular, it tells me the provider is the International Institute of Social History. Now, if I then click one level further, I leave Europeana and I move into the International Institute of Social History. Now, their website must be sufficient to be able to get the link that I clicked on, open it up, and give me the next level of details, including the full content. So Europeana only keeps enough content to index it. Every institution must keep their own. So here's now further information showing the picture, and now I've got access to it. From there, I might see any rights that are required for the usage of it and things like that. So the project that we're involved in is called Europeana Inside, and it's intended to provide one-click push of data up to Europeana from a collection management system. So we're building it into our collection management system, which is called Etherbase, and the idea is that when people get something, they can do one click, and it will push it straight up there. You have to have an agreement in place, and you have to have the keys to push it up, but the idea is to facilitate that process, because currently it's quite a big, complex process. I'm not going to go through this model here. So this is what the vision is now for an African digital library. The first thing is that all of the institutions, and this is very much multidisciplinary, the museums, the libraries, the archives, any other collection, private collections, public collections, all have an agreement with the African Digital Library to push content up to a certain place. So that is number one. Step two in the process is the library itself reorganizes itself, indexes itself, and stores stuff in databases or however it wants to store it. Then the users come in, they do a search, and they get results back. And they continue searching until they say, I'm interested in something. And at that point, they can go back to the institutions, the source institutions, get the information, and get the detailed back from them. So this is what's called an aggregator. That's the term that's coming up. You might have heard the term aggregator before. This is what it means. They aggregate content from as many places as possible and makes it accessible in a single place. This is the trusted model that Google should have adopted in the beginning. So we're now looking at this particular model. What does it mean to have a trusted access where anybody who comes in here as a user is accessing information that comes from a trusted source and that is trusted in terms of what it is? Because why you differ from anybody else, why libraries, museums, archives differ from the rest of the world, is that you've looked after your content and there's a sense of trust when people come to you. That's why we're capitalizing on that trust now. So the goal is to be the national aggregator for all heritage content, and then to push it then up to the other ones, from then as a national aggregator, push it up to Europeana, if needed, or content that's relevant. Here are some of the principles. It must be inclusive. It should be African content. It should be trusted. It's an index only. It should be open. Everything on here is totally free and runs under a a licensing agreement called CC0, which means you don't even have to attribute where it came from. That's how free this is. Aggregated, sustainable, it's adapting, it can adapt, providing support back to the institution, and it's based upon very strict standards. All right, thank you. So what are the critical success factors? So this is the essence of it now. So I've now got 5 minutes to tell you what I believe has to be done. Firstly, capacity. We've got to build the capacity to be able to do this in electronic inventories. Now, I've met many of you, and in fact, since we really started this venture, it's quite amazing how many people we've met. We've been to every part of the country. We've met a lot of people, and we found that many people are still in the dark ages when it comes to data management. So that's the first thing. Build up the catalogs, electronic catalogs. Build up a web presence. Push the data to be online, so that now it can be made online. Then provide an identifier, a persistent identifier, have an easy way to upload it, have standards in place so that everybody agrees on the same terms, and then get a buy-in from each one of the disciplines. So one of the reasons I'm here is to look at, let's have the buy-in from the museum community. So the first two critical success factors, this is the one thing that we are planning to do, and we hope that we can do this very shortly, is to do an audit of what is the status quo. Now, the last time we did an audit was when we were working on a project with Sarah 8 years ago, I think 7, 8 years ago, on the first version of the Sarah system in 2005, 2006, and we did an audit then. So now that we want to do an audit, what is the maturity of people's websites and what collections do they have? Push that into an online collection of collections database so everybody knows what collections are available, and to look at best practices in collection management. Now, the next part is persistent identifier. So we searched off for what I call the missing link. Does this make any sense to you? What does it mean? What is the missing link? This was supposed to be funny, but nobody's laughing. So, you know, sometimes you'd say a joke, it goes way over people's heads, and nobody sends. You know, the missing link, according to Darwin, was is there any species that exists between the apes and man? Okay? And, of course, all the studies that as Bruce Rubridge was telling us, all the studies are showing that there is a continuity now. But these are two of the examples from the thing. This is the missing link. But I was thinking to myself that, don't worry about Darwin. I found the missing link the other day. I clicked on this link and it wasn't there. So I found it. That is the problem. How many times do you click on something and it's not there anymore? It's changed. This URL no longer exists. A 404 message. Every day we click on those. We cannot afford this now in the day of trusted content. We've got to provide persistent access to something. So in persistent identifiers, it becomes the museum's responsibility to develop a persistent structure and to publish that structure and to provide that as the entry point to the real content. It's a two-level of addressing. It's not a URL pointing to the content. It's a trusted identifier pointing to the URL, pointing to the content, where the trusted identifier never changes in the history of the universe. Okay? Now, where does this idea come from? This is published by ICOM. It comes from a meeting held last year, June last year, in Helsinki, on what does it mean to get identifiers for data objects. The next one, easy and rapid uploading. I've mentioned this already, the idea of the one-click structure, of moving it so that if you've got your collection management system and you say, I want to publish these items up there, you select them together, and with one click, it bundles them, pushes them up there, and you get a proof of receipt there, and then immediately searchable on there. The core metadata vocabularies, I'm not going to go into this. This is really quite technical, but in particular, we're using the following. Spectrum, Dublin Core, Friends of a Friend, ORE, Lido. These are all the standards that are commonly used. To get into these standards is pretty complex. And this is why there's a lot of computer scientists in there, which is my background. A lot of people involved in artificial intelligence, which is also my background. This is what it takes. These are the people who wrote these to try and connect these together. Buying of the disciplines, we now need to get this involved. I have had discussions with the National Librarian on this already, and there's a level of interest from the library side. We know that there's a level of interest from the archive side as well, and now to try and integrate these together so that it doesn't matter what we're searching for, there is one entry point for the entire country for everything. And then our plan is to start now with a few pilot institutions, build it. We've got the design in place, but we haven't built it yet. Establish the standards for the upload, retrieval, and then embed it into whatever systems you're using as a one-click process to get it up there. In fact, we could even use that Europeana code for that as well. Question is, who owns this at the end? Well, our intention is this should be a community structure. This should not be a commercial structure. In fact, it's completely non-commercial with no actual form of income at all. It is designed to be funded by donors, funded by governments, to be available, and to be an access point for all of your collections. That's what it's intended to be. So, the questions now, in terms of this, and I ask what ifs in risk analysis. What if we do not build it? Are we getting further and further behind the rest of the world? Because you look at Europeana and see its simplicity, but yet its power at the same time. It has taken a long time to get where it is. We can learn those lessons. What if this isn't the only one? Somebody else decides they also want to build one, and suddenly we've got three or four competing digital libraries that all want to be the national aggregator. Now, are any of you familiar with BHL, the Biodiversity Heritage Library? Have a look at that as well. That's also a very good example, but more special purpose. What if there's apathy from institutions? Well, we'll carry on the same way as we've done for the last 10 years. And I think that those days are over now. You cannot be tomorrow what you were yesterday. Things have changed. And finally, what if there's no funding as well? So that is my talk on this. It's an idea, and I do believe this is the time now to start working on this. So I'm just looking. If anybody wants to take it further and chat to me, I'm very interested in this as a topic. It's quite a passion of mine. Thank you.